Hello and welcome to the Right to Sustainable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
My name's Jazza and we're very late to this whole election thing, aren't we, Jimmy? Whose fault is that?
Yours, Jazza.
It's mine. I've just been on a worldwide tour where I've visited a lot of the places the British have fucked up and just said sorry a lot. Including Hong Kong, Qatar and the Punjab border between Pakistan and India. It was really fun, very cathartic. I feel like a new man.
I think there's a few people in Hong Kong that actually would look at British rule more benignly, perhaps, than most of the rest of those places you mentioned.
No, that's also our fault.
Yeah?
Everything happening there. Don't worry, I have a video planned that I'll probably upload in like 4 years.
Okay.
If my current video output is anything to go by.
I look forward to that.
Excellent, good. I have lots of like moody shots of like the Hong Kong harbour.
Okay.
It's very nice and well prepared. I voted Remain, by the way.
We're not actually talking about Hong Kong this podcast.
Jazza. No, for once.
What are we going to be talking about?
Election?
Yeah.
Election. Well, there's lots... Basically, this is the thing. There are lots of people who are much more qualified than us to talk about all of this kind of stuff because they have, like, input and access and resources. We are just two blokes with an opinion. There are worse things, but not many. What we're going to do is kind of just...
Really selling this podcast.
Yeah. I know. We're just going to kind of like plough through what's happened so far and try and make some kind of sense of it. One of the really good things I think about us is that we don't have to pretend to be balanced about anything. And we can just scream into the void every now and again. And I'm assuming that that might happen a little bit. But we're just going to like... chat and see what happens.
Okay. Are you, let's start with the basics. Are you glad there's an election happening? Does it fill you with joy? Spark joy?
Does it spark joy? No, I'd throw this fucking election out like nobody's... You know what I want?
A people's vote.
A people's vote.
What has happened to the people's vote campaign?
No, we're not going to talk about
in recent...
No, I don't know. Everything's really fine. The desire and the march for a people's vote is not restrained by the organisation called the People's Vote.
But it will be hampered by the impending collapse of the People's Vote campaign.
Yes, probably.
Which has fallen apart due to infighting of the head honchos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which really spells... It's actually kind of like a little microcosm of what's happening with the rest of the Remain parties as well, to be completely honest.
I suppose the thing is, though, at this point... I mean, obviously they could campaign during the general election, but at this point, whichever party wins... will define whether there is a second referendum. So if the Tories win, there won't be.
Mm-hmm.
If Labour form a government, either with, you know, a majority...
Then there will be. They're committed to a second referendum.
The Lib Dems, you know, in theory would just revoke, although I think in practice would probably see the wisdom of a second referendum.
I mean, like, still a Lib Dem. And God love Jo Swinson because, I mean, she doesn't think that gay sex is a sin. I mean, that's an improvement from previous leaders. But it's even starting to grate on me a little bit that she keeps on saying that I'm going to be Prime Minister. And it's like, are you?
Theoretically, she could be. She is running to be Prime Minister.
Yeah, great. Okay. shall we listen to some music, beg them for money, and then go into our actual chinwag?
Yes.
I'm glad we agree. Jimmy, do you know what's really good about never being able to find a sponsor? Or I actually really look very hard for a sponsor for this podcast.
That's right, yeah. That's very good.
We get to play the we're supported by people like you, ordinary listeners, voice of the people. Isn't that refreshing?
That is refreshing. Also my own bank balance.
And mine.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've paid for quite a lot, Jimmy. Don't you dare forget it. We're kept going by apparently Jimmy's bank balance, but also by lovely, generous folks who support us on Patreon. It really does make a difference. It apparently lightens the load on Jimmy's bank balance.
It does.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So we want to thank...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Andrew Kilpatrick.
Bent Ugre.
David Warner.
Emerson Sparts.
Gemma Cumming.
John O.
Matt.
And Ollie McGregor.
Very good.
Excellent. Very good. We have probably mispronounced about half of those. Thank you very much, guys. It really does mean a lot that you support us. And if you too would like to keep this podcast going
forever,
forever, then
like Brexit.
Yeah, just like Brexit. Then please do go to Patreon and search for Right Dishonourable. It means a lot.
Bye. So, Jez, I feel we should kick off because I think we'll probably end with our predictions as to who's going to win. But who would you like to win? What's your preferred outcome from this election? Which is actually a different question from who you'll vote for, which we'll get on.
It is. Who would I prefer to win? Oh my God! I would probably want there to be, considering the options, a Labour largest party restrained by either the SNP or the Lib Dems.
Or both. In a coalition.
Would probably be pretty temporary. And then there'd be there's inevitability of another election if there's any kind of like that.
So why do you want Jeremy Corbyn to be the next Prime Minister and Labour to form the next government?
Because I still think that there needs to be an option to not do Brexit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're a terrible person.
I'm not. You know that. I have legitimate reasons. I've seen you on Twitter. Your horrible declarations of our undemocratic nature.
We don't want to litigate the whole second referendum thing exactly, but it's a little bit dubious, isn't it? It's not, you know, if you hold the second referendum and Remain were to win, it would poison the well for a little while, I think.
Yeah, and that is the hardest thing about it, and it's kind of actually one of the things that sits with me the most uncomfortably. Like, maybe sitting around you and absorbing it through osmosis over a period of time has kind of like happened, but I do acknowledge the problems with having a vote that doesn't then get carried out. But I think that this is, I understand kind of like the baseline of the philosophy of that and why that is not an optimal thing to do, maybe even a bad thing to do. But I think that this is a case different to kind of like to any other because of the way that the campaign has was done in 2016, because of the changes that have happened since 2016, because of the increase of information. I think there is still validity in wanting to have a second vote. Otherwise, I wouldn't want one, to be completely honest. And I still think that there is legitimacy in it. But I do understand the other side of the democratic dubiousness on which that stands.
Yeah, I think there are plausible arguments that you just made, but I still think it's wrong, effectively, for the reason you just said
at us continuing to vaguely agree and then come to different conclusions. Yeah. Who do you want to win?
So I'm sort of split in terms of, I basically want the Tories' Brexit policy at this point. I want us to actually leave, and I think that the most obvious route towards doing that is to take the deal that Boris Johnson has negotiated.
That Theresa May negotiated and that Boris Johnson then made worse.
Sure, right, okay. Yeah. But that, you know, that's the deal. I almost think now that given the other different policy choices that I'm having to consider, because this is a general election and not just
You see the flaw of it being a general election rather than a referendum. Just saying.
I think they should have just respected the referendum result from the off without, you know, having another referendum or election. So I wasn't in favour of having this election before Brexit was dealt with in some form, because I didn't really see the need for it from a democratic point of view or political point of view or whatever.
Yeah, but the democratic institutions weren't working, right? And so something needed to happen,
that is true. One of the things that could have happened is that Remainer parties could have accepted the result. But
yeah, it didn't happen though.
So in some ways I would like the Tories to win, much as it pains me to say, purely for their Leave policy, because on most other aspects I don't really see them as that trustworthy. So I mean, The Tories, like the policies that are being laid out, are a mixture of sort of spending for various things. Mm-hmm. There's been a bit of law and order with this whole, you know, life means life for child murderers, i.e. if you get a life sentence, you'll be sent away for life, mm-hmm. Rather than let out after 20 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Not the nasty party.
Yeah, I mean, they have that. That's the thing, is no matter what they put in their manifesto, that there is still a baseline level of like reactionary mm-hmm. social values mm-hmm. in there, isn't there? So there's that whole thing. Then you look at Labour, you sort of have, from my point of view, the opposite problem. Well, in that, not so much that Labour has fundamentally bad values on, say, foreign policy, but the leadership of the Labour Party has fundamentally bad values on foreign policy, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned.
Part of me really wants them to lose just so anybody else runs that shit show.
But I think the thing is, even if Labour lose this time, which, as the current polls go, looks to be the most likely option, there's no guarantee that Corbyn will even step down. I mean,
I think he probably will. That's the tone that I get. And that's what I get from kind of like, especially the way that John McDonnell talks about it. He's obviously never said it, but the fact that he openly talks about the next leader, needing to be a woman, and not saying that, well, Jeremy Corbyn is like the leader at the moment and he's got the backing of the party and stuff like that. People are quite happily speculating within the Labour Party.
He may well step down. I'm just saying he's not obliged to. And I think even if he does step down, I think that the composition of the Labour Party in terms of its membership, in terms of, you know, the various different governing mechanisms and who sits on various committees and whatnot, has changed so fundamentally under his tenure that I don't think... Mm-hmm. I think the party has permanently moved left.
Yeah, I agree. He's changed it completely. Yeah. And actually, like, moved it away from the centre ground in the same way that Boris Johnson, aligning himself along with the hardcore Brexiteers, has moved the Tory party quite far to the right.
Yeah, but I think the Tory party, actually, I read this this piece by Tim Bale, who's like a political historian, scientist, academic, and he basically wrote a piece about why the Tories have lasted so long. And if you're giving a very unflattering summary of it, it's basically because they have no principles that they're ultimately desperate to stick to.
Yeah, they just like power. They're the most successful democratic party in the world in terms of the amount of years that they've held power.
Also the longest running. Yeah. Which helps with the, you know, being in power the most or more than any other party. But for that reason, I think that, yes, Johnson has taken the Tories in a certain direction and has played up partly to the you know, the core prejudices of the Tories, meant in a, you know, in the direct sense at all, sort of in a broader sense. But, you know, that party is more likely to change once Johnson's gone than when Corbyn's gone for the Labour Party, I think. But I sort of don't want either of them in power.
But answer the question. Out of the two, you'd prefer Labour to be... you'd prefer the Tories to be in power?
I'm not really sure, actually. Because the things I don't like about them are in totally different policy areas. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to... So I think that Corbyn has an anti-Western foreign policy worldview, right? And I don't like that. I also think the Tories are more socially reactionary. I think they're much more tolerant of economic inequality, which carries its own, you know, huge host of problems. It's hard to sort of say that's worse than that. It's hard to like do the maths on that, I think. I think I'd be take Brexit out of the equation, I'd be much more happy just to vote for the Lib Dems, which is what obviously I've always done.
Yeah,
basically. So, you know, I have this, like, you know, unlike you, whereas I think you could actually fairly safely vote for the Lib Dems even if their revocation policy.
Yeah, I mean, I have the problem that I'm in an incredibly safe Labour seat as well, so it doesn't really actually matter how I vote.
Yeah, or I guess you could vote for Labour as well, although I think you probably have a lot of the misgivings about Labour that I do, actually.
I get to, whatever I do, my vote is a protest vote, because it isn't going to change who my representative in Parliament is. And so I may just draw a massive cock on it. The ballot paper, that is.
So you're still thinking about abstaining, because...
Maybe. I don't know, actually. I don't know.
That's interesting. I thought you'd know who you're going to vote for.
To be completely honest, I've thought about this in the past as well. Like in 2015, I didn't really know who I was going to vote for. And then I kind of like realised that if I'm going to vote with my conscience and my values, I align most like almost to the extreme with the Liberal Democrats. I agree with almost every single policy that they have in their manifestos generally.
Well, I've done two of those tests, who I should vote for tests, vote for policies tests, which I'm quite dubious about because I think the results you get are quite erratic if you do.
It completely depends who's written the test.
But I have got Lib Dems for both the tests that I've done. Mm-hmm. Obviously...
But then the issue of our time
is Brexit.
Doesn't gel with you.
So it's difficult to... The weighting of that in terms of designing a quiz is quite difficult, mm-hmm. I think. So I may well abstain. But if you took Brexit out of the equation, I'd just vote Lib Dem, mm-hmm. I think.
So. Oh, if only. The halcyon days of pre-2016. That's what the podcast used to be like.
Yeah. It's a choice between abstaining or, you know, making, for me anyway, mm-hmm. or just making a decision based on, you know, trying to work out mm-hmm. the pros and cons, which is very difficult.
So our answer, guys, is that we don't know, because nobody's really, nobody is really aligned perfectly to our values. Maybe we should have run the Right Dishonourable Party.
My girlfriend did say to me, like, oh, you should just run yourself if there's no one you actually like mm-hmm. doing. But you have to pay like 250
quid.
It's
quite a lot of money. Yeah, I'm not up for that.
If it was free, sure. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that should be kind of like a thing where it makes it easier for people to actually run for things. That would shake shit up. We talked about the polls a little bit. And we do have to be wary of especially national polling, because that's not how we... get our representatives. We have 650 individual races in a first past the post system, and so actually you can not get the most number of votes when it comes to national polling. You can still get the most number of seats, I believe. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, it is possible.
Incredibly unlikely, but possible.
The SNP don't do very well on a national level, but they get lots of
seats. Yeah, the SNP get about 3%, but because of the way that they get more votes than other parties in Scottish seats.
Yeah.
And so the SNP are projected to do really, really well in Scotland this time.
Yes.
All of that aside, the Conservatives are... currently polling around 40%, Labour around 30%, Lib Dems between 15 and 20%, and then everybody else like kind of trundling along at the bottom.
In the last couple of days, the Brexit Party have fallen through.
Yeah, we've also started to see Lib Dems hemorrhage to Labour as well. So we've seen both the Conservative Party and the Labour Party kind of go in tandem up. In terms of like general polling trends, it is very, regardless of how bad or good the poll is and regular polling is, it is very unlikely that there is a discrepancy and a error large enough to change the order in which the parties are at. With the Conservatives, we're at least like an 8-10 point lead of over Labour. Like, that is well outside of the margin of error generally, we would assume.
The major caveat is that in the last general election, it looked as though the Tories were going to win and have a majority. And as it turned out on the night, they were deprived of that majority.
Mm-hmm.
But the pollsters do, I mean, they say anyway, that they've actually sorted out some of the issues with it.
I mean, they said that in 2017 as well.
They did. I still think the polling is more accurate than just guessing. Even allowing for that there are inaccuracies and there can be problems with it. I think... you know, I don't think it's credible just to dismiss the polls out of hand, but you do have to have that rider that...
Yeah, right. Like, with the consistency and with the distance between those parties, it's unlikely that they're hugely out. If there were, like, a closer race between Labour and Conservatives, then, there may be some kind of, like, more room for error and for those to be switched, but it's very unlikely at the moment.
Yeah.
I expect, and I reckon the Lib Dem vote is going to collapse.
And you think they're going to move to Labour?
Yeah, right. I think so. I think that we're going to see a similar thing to 2017, where there is so much fear of the person on the other side, of the other guy who could be Prime Minister, even more so than May versus Corbyn. Boris versus Corbyn... Boris is an even more divisive figure than Theresa May was. Mm. And Corbyn is still that divisive figure that people think is going to, like, socialise their shoes.
He's quite... His ratings in terms of who do you want to be the next Prime Minister that line of polling is pretty good, though. He does much, much better than Corbyn does.
Yeah.
I don't know. There must have been equivalent polling for Theresa May. I don't know what that was at the time.
I think they were equivalently quite bad. But that is... That polarisation of our politics.
Yeah.
That is what people are voting... Not for. People are voting against whatever the other side is. And that is going to, I think, push people towards... the two polls and the two most likely people to be Prime Minister, Corbyn and Boris Johnson.
Well, the direction of travel with Labour is definitely that they've been on the up recently. I mean, the Tories have been on the up since the Brexit Party agreed not to stand against them in certain seats.
So shall we talk about this?
We can, yeah.
So in the face of a Remain alliance where... out of like 70 seats, the Lib Dems, the Greens, and Plaid Cymru, who were the Welsh party, the Party of Wales, they have decided to not contest about 70 seats or so, where they see each other kind of like maybe eating into each other's votes. Realistically, that is a handful of seats that they are then going to end up consolidating into either of those parties, into any of those parties, kind of like vote buckets. Nigel Farage really, really wanted there to be a Leave alliance. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Do you remember... Oh my God, I've completely forgotten about this. Donald Trump endorsed a Leave alliance between the Conservatives and the Brexit Party.
That does ring a bell, yeah.
On LBC, on Nigel Farage's LBC, LBC show.
I mean, in as much as Trump is an authentic fan of anything other than himself, he does seem to be a fan of Nigel Farage.
He does. I mean, like attracts like, doesn't it?
Right.
But he, first of all, said there's been a quite spectacular come down. After winning the European elections, he's gone, we're going to contest every single seat.
This is Farage you're talking about.
Farage, yeah. And then he's gone to, we're going to contest every seat that the Conservatives didn't win. Which also would have the potential of robbing them of their majority.
You mean like they're not going to contest seats that are
they don't have a majority
that are,
safe,
that are safely Tory?
Yes.
The Brexit
no,
party.
No, no. They said that they weren't the 317 seats that they won in 2017.
Yeah.
They weren't going to contest them.
Right. Okay.
But all of the other ones that the Conservatives would need in order to get a majority, because they currently don't have a majority, they would still contest.
Yeah.
The Brexit Party has had a load of their candidates be like, oh, hold on. We kind of want Brexit to happen and we might stop it from happening. We probably shouldn't stand. So a load of them have dropped out.
Yeah.
And as a result, the Brexit Party has kind of tanked a little bit.
Well, also, if you know the leader of a given party says we're not going to contest most of the seats, you'd kind of expect that to hamper, you know, a party's vote anyway, I guess. Because people... If all you're hearing is, oh, Nigel Farage isn't standing in like in all the seats, as like just a not very interested politics member of the public, you might interpret that as, oh, the Brexit Party aren't really standing at all.
Well, also interestingly, he wasn't going to be contesting a seat anyway. He wasn't going to be a candidate anywhere, probably because he's lost so much.
I think he's lost eight general elections.
Yeah,
he's
never won a seat. Oh, that makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Although he is probably the most transformative politician that we've had in the 21st century.
It depends how important you think UKIP were in persuading David Cameron to hold a referendum.
I think they were very persuasive.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is going to continue to... Do you think that that's where there is a threat to the Conservative Party?
Well, it seemingly, if you believe the polls, not really anymore. But yes, there definitely was a danger that people would vote for the Brexit Party. And I mean, you see this all the time in competitive, like marginal seats, where there is, you know, if you had a second preference system, which we had the opportunity to vote for, you'll remember.
Do you have to remind me of the sad times?
All the times are sad times.
If you
had like a system where you could put a first preference and a second preference, then different parties would win. So like most Brexit Party voters or people voting for the Brexit Party, and maybe not actually, a good portion of them though would probably vote Brexit first and then Tory second.
A large number would be Brexit first, Labour second.
Some of them would.
Yeah.
But you still have a situation.
None of them would vote Brexit first, then Lib Dem second. Let's be fair. Although apparently there are a small number of people who are doing that, and they are a fascination to me.
Well, in all of these, like, whenever you go into like the details of like a YouGov poll or something, and it sets it out on the table, you always have like, this was fascinating. It was one of those polls where it said basically, would you how opposed would you be to one of your close relatives marrying either a Leaver or a Remainer?
Yeah, yeah.
And on both sides of that question, there was some portion of Remainers who would be uncomfortable with their relative marrying a fervent Remainer and the opposite. And it's like,
well, you need to diversify the gene pool, don't you?
I'm not sure people are thinking about
that. No, is that not how it... Okay.
I guess even as, like, you know, you're a Remainer, presumably there are some Remainers that you think, oh, you're a little bit, like, you're too into it. You're like...
Yeah, I listen to Remainiacs and sometimes want Alexandreo to shut up.
There's definitely some voters of the Leave persuasion that I would be...
Only some, Jimmy.
Not overjoyed.
Only some.
Okay, all of them. including myself.
Speaking of interventions by prominent American politicians, Hillary Clinton also has waded in, but not specifically regarding the election, but regarding the fact that there's a Russian report on... It is on Russian collusion, not collusion, because I keep on
there's a British,
to American
There's a British
politics.
Report, there's a British-authored report,
yes.
An official report, mm-hmm. on the impact that that Russian... internet activity had on the referendum on EU membership.
Yeah, and that they've decided not to publish.
It's not going to be published until after the
What
election.
Are the reasons given for that?
I guess that... I mean, I don't know what the official reasons are, but the...
Is it just because of Perda, which is the period of time in the run-up to election where the civil service isn't really allowed to do anything?
Yeah, I mean... I guess I don't actually know what the official reason given was, because I think they still the report was ready to be published before they actually before the election was called.
Mm-hmm.
I assume the government doesn't want to release it because they must know what it would contain, but they probably feel that it would have a bad impact on their election campaign.
They will then release it after the election campaign, and it will have no impact because I don't think anybody really cares.
Do you think it would have had an impact if it was released now?
No, but I think morally it needs to be.
Hmm.
People need to go to the polls at least with that information having been released. I think that's gross misconduct. Because that information is there and it is being held.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem wrong.
Mm.
I agree. I mean, it's funny that Clinton is saying that, though, given that the impact money felt... that James Comey, the FBI director, announcing that he was having another look into the, you know, Clinton email scandal, had on the presidential election. Some people still feel that was what swayed it for her in the end. Because the announcement did happen very close to the polling date, didn't it?
Yeah, but that was where she won the public vote, and then, like, it was just the quirks of the Electoral College that ended up... Like, it was the right... It appealed... to just the right people, in exactly the right places for it to actually make a difference. That's what it was. And it's probably actually one of the reasons why she was really scathing towards the British government, towards Johnson's government, in a way that I don't think, even with Trump being crazy, we're used to normal, kind of like, sane politicians being like.
It's kind of interesting because she's the most famous failed presidential candidate from like a British point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because
poor John Kerry.
John Kerry's probably a second, but it's harder to think of if John Kerry came over after he lost. Was it against Bush that he was running?
Yeah, Bush too.
He would still be given an interview because he was still quite a big deal then, but. Nowhere near the same reception, do you know what I mean? Like, nowhere near the same.
But I don't think the tone, her tone was very much like, I'm going to attack the British government on this.
Hmm.
And granted, she's a private citizen now,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And
Clinton's
she can say...
private citizens?
No,
they're sort of professional public citizens, aren't they?
But the fact that she chose to do that, I think, was quite significant. And also, she continues to say that she continues to not say that she won't run for president in 2020, which makes me wish that she went away.
Surely she would have had to have made the decision by now,
nope.
Like from a practical point of view.
Nope. No voting's happened.
Obviously, she can file the papers at any time, but I mean, in terms of like the campaigning's already started, and, you know. So, do you think she's genuinely keeping that option open?
Oh, I don't know, mate. Yeah. Otherwise, why wouldn't she just say no?
I don't. Well, yeah, I guess. Maybe she's just trolling the journalists. Mm-hmm. You know? She doesn't really seem like that sort of person, but I guess it's possible. Before we move on, she and her daughter Chelsea Clinton have released this book about significant female figures, a sort of feminist icons. This is why she was doing the publicity tour.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Of course there was. Yeah, of course there was a reason for her actually being here.
And she said, you obviously wouldn't have heard this if you didn't know that, that she was asked, I think by, I think it was by Emma Barnett, was asked why she hadn't included Margaret Thatcher in her book.
Oh, how interesting. That's crazy that she didn't include Margaret Thatcher in a book like that.
Well, she basically said that she didn't feel that Margaret Thatcher stood up for the right sort of values that were being celebrated through other... and she said, I don't know if she said it quite this explicitly, that Thatcher had not done enough for women in her role as Prime Minister of the UK.
Okay. I know a lot of people who would quite vehemently disagree with that. Mm. That's mad that she would say that. But I think that that's also just a product of our times. Like, granted, Margaret Thatcher weren't no feminist, but she, like, a lot of her policies kind of, like, did provide a certain amount of freedom to women who were willing to play that game in a way that it didn't actually occur before. And also, just being the first woman to get to those dizzying heights in political life.
Yeah.
It's pretty mad as well.
I mean, Thatcher was all about, you know, economic freedom of the individual. And if there's one trend throughout, you know, the last century that has improved women's freedom, it's the ability to earn money and, you know, live independently.
Yeah, you can make that argument.
You know, there are... I mean, if she had included her, it would have been a totally defensible thing, basically, even if you disagree with most
of but that's an active decision, right? But maybe it's the way that a lot of the hardcore right idolise her in such a way, because she was such a libertarian.
Well, economically, I think socially she was quite reactionary.
Oh, yeah, of course. Section 28 was fun.
We should move on to something more election-y.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about Scotland, and not just Lorraine Kelly losing her rag Jennifer Akuri on the Today programme.
Is it Akuri?
Akuri. Akugaboo.
That's Boris Johnson. The woman that has not slept with Boris Johnson.
She's never said that.
She's come very...
She's had a relationship with Boris Johnson.
Just to put... We'll get to the Scottish thing, but you're... So Lorraine Kelly on... was it Good Morning Britain or like...
Good Morning Britain, the one with Piers Morgan.
So Jennifer Akuri, who is officially this tech entrepreneur who got given a load of money while Boris Johnson was London Mayor.
Yeah, it's currently... That whole situation is currently under investigation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I really wish that had kind of like been resolved before the election as well. That would be nice.
Well, Boris Johnson almost certainly, you know, gave money to...
Boshed her.
Shagged her. And then gave her some money at some point during the...
Yeah, when she didn't deserve that money.
Her interviews have been utterly hilarious.
Bizarre. Why would you choose to do that? I understand the trope of sexism that surrounds the phrase... a woman scorned, right? But bloody hell, that's a woman scorned. Basically, she tried to get in touch with Boris Johnson after a load of after this investigation started, and quite recently still has his personal number, called him up, and he hung up on her.
No. He gave his phone to his advisor, who then imitated a Chinese accent.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Yeah.
She claims anyway, I think. I don't know if that's been verified.
I 100% believe that story.
I do believe the story. It's too weird to be untrue.
And then as a result of him passing up my phone and his friend putting on a bad Chinese accent, she has then done the rounds on all of the TV shows saying that I had a relationship with him, but that's all I'm going to discuss.
Well, she even said at one point, like, because... On one of the shows, they said, if you could deliver a message to Boris Johnson, what would you say? And she looked at the camera and she said, oh, I wasn't just some one-night stand or some girl you picked up at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very strange phrasing when you're, you know...
When you're a professional. When she's meant to be a tech entrepreneur. Yeah. I love that on Good Morning Britain, she was also labelled like the thing that says who she is. It said that she was a tech entrepreneur and former model, which was very, like, Daily Mail of them.
But, I mean, her modelling career is, at this stage, slightly more plausible than the tech entrepreneur side of things, do you not think?
Her modelling career is not why she's in the news. I don't think that's necessary.
That's true. But you can't put, you know, Boris Johnson's former fuck buddy at the... Which is
I wish they bloody did. That would be amazing. I think that that's a story around like the character of Boris Johnson that we're going to live to regret when he becomes Prime Minister again. Don't you think? I really worry about... Like, he's going to be a terrible PM.
He's done a lot of stuff that should disqualify him from being Prime Minister. So mm-hmm. even if you lay aside anything to do with policy, like... I mean, that's probably... That's not the worst thing he's done, I think, just in
no,
life.
I agree. It's on the long, long list.
You know, he also... this is occasionally brought up, but not as often as it should be. He agreed to, like, pass on the address of a journalist that one of his friends wanted to rough up.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Is it Darius Guppy or something like that?
I can't remember.
That's the Boris Johnson's friend. And there's a record... For some reason, there's a phone recording of him agreeing to do this.
Well, back when journalists thought it was okay to record telephone conversations without asking the person.
No, it was before that, I think.
Yeah. So back when it was normal to do that?
No, but the person... I think it must have been his friend who recorded it.
Oh, really?
I can't imagine Boris Johnson recorded it. And his friend was just a random guy who I think ended up in jail at some point. For something unrelated to that. Yeah. believe it. But he... Yeah, there's a bunch of incidents that should disqualify him from really holding any office, mm-hmm. you know, any public office, let alone being Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. But the Scottish question. Lorraine Kelly basically was doing the segment after the Accrue interview and went, well, what was the point of that? You didn't say anything? What was the point? Well, anyway, later on in this show, which was quite brilliant. But Scotland, we talked about the polls and the S&P are probably going to do better than they did in 2017. We're probably going to be a squeezing of both the Labour and the Conservative vote north of the border.
So they have, what, about 50 MPs at the moment?
Yeah. They have 37.
Oh, okay.
30-something?
And there's 57 in Scotland, I think.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
Pushing towards 60.
Yes, question mark.
Yes.
and they are probably going to do very, very well and have some kind of a say in if the Tories don't get a majority, like whoever forms a government, perhaps. They're very, very keen on a second independence referendum, which is kind of like, imagine in Scotland, if you were first of all voting on the referendum to leave the European Union as the main reason why you're going to the polls mm. to vote in a general election, but then also putting on top of that a nice little layer of Scottish nationalism and whether Scotland should be an independent nation. There's a really interesting phenomenon of there's this segment of Scottish voters who both wanted to leave the European Union and wanted to be an independent country, mm. kind of like the ones who just wanted to fuck everything up.
Just people who wanted to run their own affairs and not be bossed around by you know, foreigners in respectively Westminster or Brussels.
Hate you. they're going to be...
That position is far more coherent than like...
But who does that person vote for? Does that person vote for the SNP who want there to be an independence referendum, but also want Scotland to be a member of the European Union and probably adopt the euro? Or do they vote for the Conservative Party who make Brexit happen, but then reinforce the union?
Do you think if Brexit happens, it will reinforce the union?
I think if Conservatives are the biggest party, they're not going to grant a second independence referendum.
They're
in
not,
their term.
But in terms of like the long game, mm. you know, I think if you're someone who wants Skexit and Brexit,
Skexit is not a thing. Don't you dare.
Then yeah, having the Tories in, and then, I mean, probably the best thing for you is for the SNP still to do well, but then for the Tories to sort of win overall in Westminster, and mm-hmm. then you'll get Brexit, and then you know at some point there may well be another opportunity for a second Scottish independence referendum.
There will be. It'll be in a while though. What I think happens with that is if the Conservatives get a majority or form the next government, they will end up. There are Scottish parliamentary elections in 2021.
Hmm.
the S&P will wipe that. They may even get a majority again, as they did in 2014, right? Or 2000...
Whenever it was, they got a majority, yeah.
Will then demand an independence referendum, but the Conservatives won't grant it, and that will rise up a kind of like nationalism in Scotland even more, so that the next time that there actually is an independence referendum, it will become more likely.
It might do.
If Labour get in and can't have to work with the S&P and grant a independence referendum, I think that the union side is going to be more likely to actually win in that independence referendum, and it puts it to bed at least for a little bit. So if you want to maintain the United Kingdom, vote Labour.
Well, yeah, the thing is though, if Labour formed a government with the S&P, one of the good arguments that there should be a second Scottish independence referendum, is that if Britain leaves the EU, the fundamentals of Scottish independence have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people would have voted to remain in the UK, assuming that the UK was going to remain in the EU, and now that has changed. Something substantive has changed, so that is sort of a fair argument. But if Labour hold a second referendum on our EU membership, the UK as a whole, and then Remain wins, that then actually puts the kibosh on legitimate reasons for a second Scottish referendum. Not that that will.
But
I think the
legitimacy
the pushing for it.
The legitimacy for wanting a independence referendum in Scotland lands at the feet of the Scottish Parliament. If there is a majority for there being an independence referendum in that institution, then it should happen, I think. And I don't think it should really go via Westminster, even though the Prime Minister of the UK does have to have sign off there.
We talked previously about like the whole Neverendum concept, and like you said that if Remain had won the referendum, Nigel Farage obviously would have continued to campaign for us to leave, and there would still have been a campaign to push for that. There needs to be some sort, like when you organise a referendum, there needs to be like an agreed period for like
how long, at least
20 years.
If
you're going to say once in a generation, that, I mean, 20 years isn't exactly a generation, but do you know what I mean?
People wouldn't be happy about 20 years, though.
I suppose the trouble is that you can't really bind future parliaments, but, you know, people vote for the S&P not necessarily because they want Scottish independence. Mm-hmm. They vote for the S&P for, you know, because they are a political party. They have loads of other policies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem slightly ridiculous. And the other thing is, if the UK remains in the EU, say, and then Scotland got their second referendum, there's still no guarantee that they'd be allowed instant EU membership. So a vote for independence.
Well, the EU has made noises around, like, well, if the UK has left and Scotland wants to rejoin, then they'd
fast track the process. But what if the UK remains and Scotland?
But then is there then going to be there'd have to be border checks if the UK has left the customs union, which is what Boris Johnson wants to do.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's such a it's a mess.
It is a mess.
It's an absolute fucking mess. Speaking of messes, what happens if there is a hung parliament?
More stagnation, I think. I think we could probably see another situation developing where we keep having extensions and they keep wrangling to no particular avail. Or maybe the EU just says, look, you're clearly not going to sort this out, so we're just going to stop granting you extensions and you can go for a hard Brexit. But I think it's generally in the EU's interest just to keep this palaver going for as long as possible.
I don't...
Do you not think?
Yeah, I understand your wording of that, but I think they actually have an... their desire is to not actually get involved at all and not be a deciding factor in the future of the UK, and for that to kind of like play out devoid of kind of what the European Union does. Obviously Macron is trying to be bullish around this kind of stuff, but I don't think actually the European Union has a desire to kick the UK out.
No, that's
kind
what
of before anything has been decided.
That's what I'm saying, is I think they'll keep granting us extensions almost in perpetuity, because
like it's a meme now, isn't it? In the year 2047 the UK sends a rocket to the Brussels like Grand Council and blah blah blah. It's quite funny.
And the longer it takes for Brexit to actually happen, the less likely it will actually happen, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Just as a general
principle.
Also
because of what I love to call demographic churn.
Old people dying.
Old people dying. I think, and this is another Jazza prediction, I think that if there is a hung parliament, there may... What if the Conservative Party then becomes quite keen on another referendum, just to put it to bed? With an eye to campaign for them to leave on their deal.
Hmm. Yeah, well, look, I think if... So say it's a hung parliament, but the Tories still have the most seats or whatever. I think there is an argument of like, okay, well, the general election clearly didn't solve this.
Yeah.
Our only options now are for the government to cancel it or for us to do a referendum, mm-hmm. I guess. So that does sort of follow. Whether the Tories would agree, I mean, there's a lot of Tories that won't agree with that logic, but...
And the vast majority of them who are now running to be Conservative members of Parliament are going to be very aligned to the Boris Johnson idea of Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even if he was returned with exactly the same number of seats, you'd assume that they would be a more compliant bunch as far mm-hmm. as his agenda goes.
Who, although that didn't work for Theresa May...
It's true.
Who... Predictions. What do you think is going to happen?
I still think the most likely possibility is a Tory majority, like a decent-sized Tory mm-hmm. majority. Maybe not some of the, you know, they've seen predictions of like the Tories getting 400 seats, which I think is slightly unrealistic.
Who's predicted that? That's silly.
Some of the polls, if you actually, you know, if people do seat forecasting based on them, do come up with those results.
The
apparently.
Seat forecasting is dodge.
Well, yeah. But I think the Tories could emerge from this with a healthy majority that allows them to get Boris Johnson's deal through and allows them to govern stably for the next 5 years.
Okay.
You know, as stably as that sort of government will govern, do you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a functioning government for... how long has it been? Two, three years? Or,
yeah. We're like Belgium in the noughties.
Yeah. I think that's the most likely scenario, but it's, you know, that's a probabilistic thing. I'm not saying it will definitely happen.
There's so much that still needs to happen. We're recording this just before, or actually, the first Jeremy Corbyn Boris Johnson debate has just started. As we're recording this, I think actually those debates are unlikely to move an awful lot in the same way that they didn't move an awful lot in.
You mean move public opinion?
Yeah. Void of something like massive happening. But there is still a really long campaign to... like, it's 3 weeks, right? 2 weeks. 3 weeks. It's still 3 weeks to go.
What's the date? Is it the 19th?
Yeah.
So it's the 19th today.
It's about 3 weeks.
It's about 3 weeks.
Yeah, just over 3 weeks.
They haven't released the manifestos yet.
Yeah, they haven't. Only the Greens released today. And the manifestos go out this week. Yeah. I don't think the Tories are going to make that mistake again. What my gut at the moment says hung parliament again with the Conservatives as the largest party.
So roughly a similar seat composition.
I think it's going to be very, very similar. Maybe with Labour losses, but Lib Dem gains.
Why do you think that?
There are a lot of seats where the Lib Dems are just there. Are like really, really competitive. There was some polling. I can't remember who did the poll, which is really bad of me. But of London marginals.
That was Delta poll.
Where the Liberal Democrats, if Labour drop out or the Labour vote collapses there, which in leafy London, it's very possible, you end up with the Lib Dems beating the Tories, which like is obviously losses to the Conservatives. But I think... I don't know. It's my gut, Jimmy. Don't make me analyse it too much.
Okay. I mean, I don't think the polls suggest that currently, but
I agree.
As you say, we are 3 weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you said it yourself, the vote seems to be sort of coalescing around
the main two again. I think we're going to do something
again.
Similar.
So I guess we'll see. You obviously, I guess, prefer that option to the Tories winning because that doesn't mean we leave.
I kind of hate this partisanship within myself, but I think that Conservative government will be appalling.
I don't think that's partisanship. I think that's, you know, I'm assuming that you've looked at their policies.
Yeah, but I'm the guy who in 2015 made a video about the policies that I agreed with each of the parties on.
Yeah, but that you're, I mean, as I don't know if we said this before we started recording, but the Brexit Party are campaigning to have a written constitution and abolish the House of Lords.
We like those ideas.
Yeah, so
it's very Lib Demy, actually.
They are both very Lib Demy.
That's the only reason we actually like it.
So there will be, I mean, there will be parties. I mean, if you, if anyone who's listening to this goes and reads any of the manifestos, there'll be some policies that you like. Mm-hmm. I think. Unless you're a proper, like, Corbyn psychopath or something like that.
Ooh,
you
know, where everyone else... We need guests.
Everyone else is evil, but generally speaking. So, but yeah, I think I kind of agree with you in that I think the Tories just have some bad instincts. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's why I've been hugely reluctant to side with them on a lot of this Brexit stuff, even though I didn't vote Leave.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think Labour also has some very bad instincts now, which wouldn't have been true under Ed Miliband's Labour, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there were other things that were unconvincing about Ed Miliband, but not...
his ability to eat a bacon sandwich. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Missed those days. Right, shall we wrap up and meet again next week when the manifestos are out?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, tied him in, guys.
Wings are going to have to actually read the bloody manifestos.
You are. They'll be really short. They don't want people to think about the policies. There'll be a pamphlet.
Probably for the best.
Where can they find you, Jimmy?
You can find me at JDE Nichols.
And you can find me at Jazza John. And the podcast continues to be dormant, but still sentient, at Right Dishonour.
Yes.
Cool.